I had Logan Paul on my podcast.
Would Logan do it with me?
Logan would kick your ass, I think. Mm. You're riding a fantastic wave. How could you not make some mistakes along the way?
How can you be for small government and then have the government dictate all these things in your personal life,
exactly,
right? You idiots. You got it completely wrong.
Can't you just wake up and stop? I was walking down the hallway like a dotted bull with a needle sticking out of my ass. Tell me the five steps to like to the gain to the point where someone like you would say, I want this guy in my life. I want to help this guy. Hey guys, JB here, the Wolf of Wall Street in the Wolf's Den, and the end is near to the lockdown. Now, let's talk turkey. You know how I feel about the lockdown. You know, I feel it was bogus, it wasn't called for, it was a wild overreaction to bad data given by some guy in London named Neil Ferguson, from the London, whatever, not the College of Medicine, I think it's not the Lancet, whatever, wherever he's from. I try to block it out of my mind, but Neil Ferguson said that 2 million people would die in the US and 500,000 would die in the UK unless everyone hid in their houses under their covers. And it was that study that caused the lockdowns all across the world. Bottom line, what they don't tell you often, it's getting out there now, I've been saying this for months, or at least 6 weeks, 2 months, that the week after he made that prediction, guess what? He reduced it down to, oops, sorry, it's only 100,000 people are going to die in the US and 20,000 in Britain. And then, oops, again, a week later, only 50,000 will die and so forth. The point is he dramatically reduced his numbers. And just so you know, this guy has got like the worst track record in the world when it comes to predicting pandemics. This guy's always wrong. He's like Henny Penny, the sky is falling. Now, I don't know what his motivations are. I don't know if he's evil or just wrong. He just sucks at what he does. Because this guy truly sucks moose cock at making predictions. This guy, when it came to the swine flu, I think he said there'd be like, you know, I'm going to make numbers here. Like, he's just I'm not going to be the exact numbers here, but this is just an example of how off he is. He said there'd be 100,000 people dead with swine flu. 50 people died. I'm not even exaggerating. It was like that ratio, right? When it came to Zika, he said X amount of people, will, like, you know, 1 million will die. It was like 5 people. Slight exaggeration, not much. When it came to Ebola, he was off at like 3,000% on that one. When it came to hoof and mouth disease, or you know, foot and mouth disease in Great Britain, he said that unless they slaughter all the cattle there at billions of dollars, of course, 100,000 people will die in Britain. Guess what? Like 30 people died. And they slaughtered billions of dollars of cattle. Because this maniac makes these crazy predictions that are just out of control. They're never even close. Don't know why he's doing it. Maybe he has good intentions and just doesn't know any better. Maybe he has no bad intentions, but he's one of those, you know, doom and gloomers. Like, you know, you see, it was a movie I saw recently. What was it? Outbreak with Dustin Hoffman. He's playing the guy who always thinks the pandemic is going to kill everybody. And finally, he's right, right? But the point is that Neil Ferguson basically was really the root cause of the lockdowns. His models. And the guy never gets it right. Anyway, what can you say? What's done is done. Thankfully, the people have risen up. And I've said this about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I started getting, you know, my last rant, which had the most views of all, was like, give me liberty or give me death. That's what I said. And that had like, you know, I think it had 500,000 views in the first day on Instagram, right? Give me liberty, give me death, along with a lot of other choice words I had to say. And I pretty much said it's time for everyone to start revolting. Not violently, but exercising their constitutional right to be known, that, you know, to be heard that this is not okay, and to protest and whatnot. And right around that time, with, you know, a few days of me saying that, I'm not saying it's because I said it. I don't think it was, in fact. But let's just say that I was a bit early and I predicted it would happen. People started protesting. And I really believe, even though they're trying to say, no, oh, no, it's not that people protested, it's because the science is now saying it's time to go. Bullshit. Bullshit. You saw what was happening, politicians, and you watched the people take back control. And lo and behold, we're finally opening up. Not fast enough in my book, but at least we're starting to open. What does that mean for you? Well, there's no point in going backwards now and saying, did you follow my advice? Did you make the most of your time locked away at home? Did you upskill? Did you work on yourself? Did you invest in yourself? Did you not sit still and cower under the covers? Did you move forward? I did. And everyone that worked with me, we've done some amazing things over this 2 months. We're emerging as a bigger, better, stronger company. There's always amazing opportunity in crises. And I'm not saying this to try to impress you about myself. I'm trying to impress upon you the fact that if you didn't do that, it's still not too late. We still have another 3 or 4 weeks of a very slow ramp up here. And I think it's going to be a little more than that of pain economically while the economy finds its footing again. There's going to be winners and there's going to be losers. There's going to be industries that never come back the way they did or the way they were. And there's going to be new industries sprouting up to serve the needs, wants, desires, fears, and pain points of a post-COVID world. I want you to think about that. My next guest on this podcast today, this is a man who specializes in door-to-door sales. He runs, in fact, an annual convention called the Door-to-Door Convention, very well respected. The reason I thought this was a perfect guy to have on the podcast right now today was because as we reopen, as we start going back at it now as a country, as an economy, let me tell you something. Guess what? You might think that, oh, door-to-door, people are not going to be comfortable with that. No, that's not true. A, there's a way to approach a door, and that's going to wear off very quickly, but what will not wear off is this. There's been a paradigm shift now of people working from home. That's not going to go back. Yes, people will go to the office again, but you're going to find a much greater percentage of people working from their homes. That means for all you door-to-door guys, you're going to find a lot more people home during the day. For all you people calling on the telephone at homes, you're going to find a lot more people home during the day. Think about that. Now, obviously, this is not just a podcast for salespeople or entrepreneurs. It's for everybody. But I want you to listen to the strategies that we come up with. Listen to the things that we say about sales, influence, marketing, positioning, how you become the only logical choice in your market, how you pre-market, how do you actually contact this market almost before you even get there? So when you actually do show up, you're like the guy that's already been there 3 times. How do you do that the right way? Not in a foolish way that wastes time and money, but in a clever way that positions you as the only logical choice in that market, in that neighborhood to do business with. This is a really, really powerful podcast, chock full of information, chock full of strategy. And the guy's a hell of a nice guy. Sam Taggart is his name. So with no further ado, we'll give a couple of seconds here to hear from our sponsor, which is me. Then we'll get to the podcast. I'll see you in a second. This is a perfect time now to take a brief pause here, and I'm going to give everybody here a gift. I'm going to give everybody here free access to the introduction and the first training module to the formalized straight line certification program. This is a system that I sell for $5,000 here to individuals, to large corporations, medium-sized corporations as well, right? It's a very robust, interactive training with quizzes and exams. It's ultimately a diploma-based course that changes people's lives. But I figure what I'll do here, it's like 12 or 13 modules, but I'm going to give everybody, this is not one of those free things where I say, and you have to enter your credit card, and I hope you don't then forget to cancel. No, no, no. I'm talking really free. I'm going to just simply give you a link and you sign up for it and you get access to the introduction, then the first training module, which is the 5 core elements of the straight line, cracking the code for sales and influence. This alone will change your existence. You're just understanding what has to go into getting someone to buy from you. And again, there's no obligation. You're not putting a credit card in. You have to just enter your information here. And then after you're done, once you've gone through this, if you want to keep going, then we can have a conversation about you picking up with the rest of the train. But this first part of it is free. My gift to you. All right. Let me give you the link. The link is jordanbelfort.com. Simple, right? / Bonus, B-O-N-U-S. So after you're done listening to this podcast, go to jordanbelfort.com/, that's a / bonus, B-O-N-U-S, and you'll be on a page. You enter your information, and that will give you access to this incredibly robust training. You're going to get the introduction and the first module, which includes the quizzes, the exercises. And I promise you that when you're done with this first module, you are going to be blown away.
I have what's called the DDD formula, right? So it's reps times opportunities times closing percentage equals money. My approach would be I'd get a bunch of kids and I would say, we're all going to freaking blitz this area and either, you know, knock, leave a flyer, like leave some kind of leave behind and try to drum up some interest. Then I'm going to buy the data for the neighborhood. So then I can retarget via social media. I can do a ringless voicemail drop, text campaigns. The front door is just one door. Mm-hmm. But you go against me belly to belly. I don't know any other avenue of marketing that's going to beat me when I'm standing at your door and I've already built some trust through other avenues. And now I'm here. It's kind of like it's go time.
All right. So, Sam, here's the deal. You are the door-to-door guy in a world where when you knock on someone's door, you got to be worried they didn't pull a shotgun and pull the trigger, right?
So it hasn't pulled the trigger on me yet, but I've definitely had a few fair shares of shotguns.
No, I'm talking about in a post-COVID world.
Yes.
When, you know, you're supposed to have social distancing. So when you knock on someone's door, obviously there's going to be some resistance or, you know, some pullback. I want your opinion now, because obviously no one really knows what's going to happen, but how do you think this plays out? And let's say right now we're talking, it's, you know, month of April, maybe this will come out in early May, the latest, right? Let's project out to like the middle of the summer, which is probably the height of door-to-door season, right?
Yep.
It's July 1st. You knock on someone's door. What do you do in this post-COVID world?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I almost look at like the country split, right? There's like some states that are like, we're over this. Like Idaho's pushing to be like, let's just go business to normal. And they're trying to like play it off like, yeah, this is all just a big thing. And then there's some states like California where it's kind of like, I go to the hotel room last night and they're like, where's your mask? And I'm like, oh, geez, hold on. You know, they're like, step outside. I think they almost pulled a gun to showing up to the hotel. So I think that, you know, depending on where you're knocking is going to play a little bit into that. Mm-hmm. But I also think what's interesting, businesses are going to shift. And I think a lot of businesses have realized that they can have at-home employees and still function. So I think that you're going to find a lot more people home. And so that what's nice is, you know, and it's going to take this longer transition for people to get back to work and get back to jobs and get back to kind of the normal day-to-day. And so I actually look at door-to-door as this is one of the biggest opportunities in two regards. One, more people home, and two, employment. You know, most people, when you post a job on Indeed, people are going to be like door-to-door sales or commission-only job, and they're going to be like, no, I'm going to go get a normal job, right? Where I think in a crisis or when unemployment's so high, they'll do what it takes to survive, right? And so, you know, like I look at the biggest boom in door-to-door is actually 2008, 9, 10, as far as these companies growing and getting some really good long-term talent. And people would have never succumbed to door-to-door sales or whatever. And they're like, I'm a real salesman and I sell software. I sell medical supplies. Right. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, door-to-door is actually a very real sales profession. And I look at them as sometimes more the grittier type salespeople. And what come to find, like the talented salespeople going that avenue of sales end up actually thriving and loving it and doing it for 10 more years. You know what I mean? So, but that's the industry, right? But then going to the consumer, I think that there's definitely going to be a different approach, like some sensitivity there, maybe less handshakes at the door. You know what I mean? I think almost like the handshake might disseminate a little bit, right? Like people would be much more leery to, like when I knock a door, I'm typically, hey, I'm Sam. And I'm like, reach out my hand. And every once in a while I'd get that dick that's like, I'm not going to shake your hand, you scum of the earth. And you're just like, I'm just saying hello. Like, you know, it's that awkward, like, I'm just trying to be polite and you still won't even reach out your hand. I think there's going to be more of that. And I think a door-to-door person might have to be, you know, stand a little farther back.
Let me give you an example here. Yeah. So I was renting a house this week, right, down on, by the beach, because I live in an apartment. I needed a little bit of space, right? So I had a friend of mine from the East Coast ship me masks by UPS, right? Because they passed the law here, as you saw when you came in.
Yeah,
they're pretty fucking intense when it comes to masks, right? So I said, he was selling masks online. I said, all right, send me some masks, right? I gave him the address. He ships them to the wrong address. Like, he reversed the numbers. He must have dyslexia or something. He reversed the numbers, and I'm waiting day two, day three, no masks show up, right? So I'm like, what the hell? So I said, hey, send me the receipt. I want to see where you sent them to. Sure enough, he sent them to, like, instead of 4485, it was 4458, right?
Yeah.
So I said, all right, let me, you know, go and down. And I'm like, wait a second. I'm going to have to go to someone's house now, knock on their door, and I'm like, shit, I don't want to get shot. So what did I do? I said, okay, well, I'm, you know, an ex-door-to-door guy. You know, I have a lot of experience in knocking on doors. So I said to myself, well, how am I supposed to knock on someone's door in a post-COVID world? So what I simply did was I walked up to the door. I knocked. I took six steps back.
Yeah, like far.
No, far. I tripled my normal distance. Normally, I knock, I'd be 2-3 feet off the door, yep, off the door jamb, right? I went back maybe 10 or 12 feet. And then the guy goes, hey, who is it? And I said, hey, listen, I'm sorry to bother you. I know it's kind of weird, but he says, you know what he said to me?
What are you selling?
No.
Oh, what'd he say?
Get the fuck out of here. Oh. You don't even tell me you're the Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, he said that. Okay.
True story. So
this is awesome. Oh, I thought he was saying it like you're selling him something. Like,
coincidentally. Oh, that's, he's like, awesome. I was just watching your videos this morning. It was the funniest. Anyway. So then, like, it was like this really weird thing. He's from New Zealand, the guy.
Okay.
He's like, oh, no, South Africa. And I just been on a call that morning on a webinar with South Africans. It was, like, really funny. So anyway, so we started talking. And then I was like, all right, thanks, right? So then I was on the wrong address. I went down, couldn't, never found the right door. And as I'm pulling away, the guy comes running up to me. I'm like, oh, shit. He goes, can I get a picture? And he comes and puts his arm around me.
And he's totally cool with it.
And he breaks the social distancing. He puts his arm around me. I'm like, smile, like, uncomfortably smile. Because I don't really care about that at all. But it was ironic. The point I'm making is, and that's a true story, but I swear to God, I'm not making this up. Because my girlfriend was in the call with me, and she was like, that's the strangest thing, right? And I'm not saying I'm that famous that every door I knock on, someone knows me. I'm just saying this particular guy happened to be a fan of mine, yeah, studied my stuff. He was a salesman himself, right? But the interesting thing was, is that I felt pretty good about it. In other words, once I backed off the door, I felt it was appropriate.
Yes.
So and this is in the heart of the lockdown. Okay, now, obviously, in my mind, I had a reason why I was knocking on his door that was legitimate. So I felt good about that. I felt morally correct to be knocking on the door.
Yes.
Because, frankly, what happened was the guy signed, whoever did it, signed for the stuff and kept it.
Free mask. Yes,
exactly. So I think that I'm sensing that there is going to be a way to go door to door. Going back to the point you made, though, you said something. You called it, you know, some states think it's no big thing. And what do you, could you expand on that?
Yeah, I think that there's kind of the, I don't want to say it's conservatives and
no, let's say it that, yeah, let's be, yeah, true, like, let's be honest on this, like, podcast. Let's not lie, let's fucking conservatives, yeah, and liberals.
There's conservatives and liberals, right?
Let's be honest, let's be honest.
Tend to kind of, like, you know, they're very sensitive, right? They're very, like, it's all about the emotion. It's all about, like, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Like, I literally got people, when I said I'm flying out to California to meet with you, like, people were like, you're killing, there's people dying.
Liberals, for the most part, they don't want to hurt anyone's feelings as long as you agree with them.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm not trying to get all political here, but then you have Texas. So you have Texas, Utah. Like, I have guys in Utah right now slaying it. They're literally looking at this like kid in a candy store because they're like, everyone's home. You normally go knock 20 doors and five people are home. They're like 18 out of 20 people. And guess what? The homeowners aren't sitting there like, what the hell? They're not like, get the F out of here, because, you know what I mean? They're not.
So there,
like,
are people
pissed.
Knocking on doors right now.
Right now.
In Utah.
In Utah.
So is there a shelter in place order in Utah?
No. So it's can't meet with 10 people or more, right? So it's kind of like, you're not supposed to, like, socially distance, but it's not like they're going to fine you.
Okay.
So there's no, like, fine, right?
Sure.
And that's what the government has put in place, right? So,
well, state by state,
state
there's a big
state,
difference, right?
Yeah. So Utah is a very conservative state, right? So you go to a homeowner and it's, you know, maybe 6 weeks ago or 6 months ago, you knock a door and they're like, get the F out of here, right? But now they're kind of like, oh, human interaction, please come back. Like, you know what I mean? They're like, I have been quarantined and I've been stuck here and I've been with my three kids and they're driving me ultimately insane and you're giving me an excuse to talk to another adult. That is the response now. You know what I mean? And it's like,
it's really interesting.
Like the, just you, like old people, they're my favorite. Like you go to a door, an old person's door, and that grandma's going to talk your ear off and tell you about like five stories about who knows what, right? And you just have to play kind of the grandson type salesperson and just, okay, yeah, oh, that's awesome. And you sit there and kind of build that trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to buy whatever you're selling. They just want to talk to somebody.
Right.
But if they like you, then they'll end up buying from you, right? So I look at it like society, and what's interesting in these conservative states is they're kind of like, I'm over this whole COVID thing. I'm over this whole, you know, like this is all like way overblown. And this is my opinion. And this is what I'm seeing because I talked to a million salespeople all over the country. And then you have like still those liberal side of things that are like, dude, you're out there literally as a carrier going door to door and literally like implanting, licking their face. You know what I mean? You're kissing every homeowner. And I'm like, no, we can stay 6 feet away and have a conversation and still bot. Like, you know what I mean? Like I could still serve you because what's interesting is most of the services, you know, sling door to door tend to be essential services. You talk roofs, you talk solar, you talk alarms, you know, like pest control. It's like the bugs didn't go away. The hailstorm still kind of hit. Like you still need electricity. Like, you know, like you think about it and the services are still necessity. Like there's still stuff that you're buying, whether you're stuck at home, quarantined, bad economy or good economy.
Right.
It's kind of like, I don't know. That's my two cents.
So going back to what you said about the grandmother, right? And how the grandmother is going to sit there and want to talk to you about stories. So you play the grandson role and listen to it, even though you don't really care what they're saying because you want to make a sale. Is there anything disingenuous about that? Is there anything underhanded about that? Or is that actually okay?
It's a really good question. And I've had people hate on me for having this opinion. My opinion is it is 100% genuine. It's 100% okay. Like if your intention to sell somebody is the right intention of I'm here to serve you,
mm-hmm.
the right way to navigate that, it's leaning into the personality situation, demographic, age, you know, those things play into, it's mm-hmm. like, if I don't listen to you and I try to just, let's get right to the point, granny, let's buy. Like for me, I'm like, that's not a good selling situation. That's not a good selling experience and a buying experience. And so, you know, I love selling the grandma and I'm okay. Like I crochet, you know, right. Like I talk about crocheting with elderly really? Ladies
and, you and have, I literally you show them the pictures. Giant down there? You
sure? Yeah. I in high school I made crocheted beanies.
Macrame?
No, like full on crochet. So like I'm whipping out pictures of my crocheted beanies. I made my prom vest. I made like, I'm like weirdly,
oh, good Lord.
I made my like kids blankets when they were born. Like, and I'm proud of it. So I show these old ladies. I'm like, oh, did you make that? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, oh, what's it? Like, that's a double stitch. And she's like, how do you know that? And I'm like, oh, let me show you some of the stuff I made. And all of a sudden, we talk about crocheting for an hour. Is that disingenuous? Is that wrong? Is that manipulative? No, it's just building a connection.
Right. And so I guess you said something very important. So you said, as long as my intention
yes.
is that I'm going to try to sell them something that's going to improve their life.
Exactly.
Like right? Then how I actually break through that outer shell of where someone just says, you know what? We're not in rapport. I don't want to listen to you. I don't know you. So you're essentially getting into rapport with someone
exactly.
with the intent to do something to help them in some way. Sell them something to make their life better.
And somebody that's been in lived 80 years or 70 years or whatever has been through the ringer a right. time or two. Like right. they're not stupid. Like they have stronger and thicker walls because they've been scammed. They've been through bad experiences. They've been through, you know, manipulated situations and lost money. Like they've been through the ringer. So their walls and defense systems is so much higher. So to build the rapport and get right into that, like we love each other state is so critical because the trust level, I think, in the society with elderly people tends to be a lot lower in some situations and some, depending on state and depending on where they live and things like that, it might be higher. But I think that for the most part, there's a bigger wall or barrier. And if you're good at navigating that wall, they tend to be right. great customers.
So I agree with you, by the way. And I think what you're saying is 100% true. It goes back to the analogy of, You know, is a gun or a rifle a good thing or a bad thing? Well, it depends who's wielding it, and it depends the purpose behind which it's being wielded. In other words,
exactly.
The mother on the farm that's going to ward off three invaders is going to rape her and her children and blows them away with a shotgun. That's a really great use of the weapon.
My wife this morning, because she's like nervous, there's a home invasion by our house, and she was super nervous last night. And, you know, I'm here in California, and she's like, man, I had Milo, our dog, and the three kids all in our bedroom, and the alarm double door locked, like everything set, right? And I was like, babe, we need to get you like a sweet shotgun or something. You know what I mean? Mm. Like just to make her feel good. Is it a bad thing to get a shotgun? Like, anyway, so.
How important do you think physical appearance is when it comes to selling door-to-door? For example, when I was very young, I sold door-to-door. And I always said, you know, I have a major edge over most people. Because just imagine how young I look when I was 21. I look really young now.
Okay, real question is, who's better looking, Leo or you?
Leo.
Just kidding. I'm just messing.
Leo. Only my mother thinks I'm better looking, but that's okay.
Just messing.
No, I don't mean good looking. I mean non... Here's what I mean. No. It's not about handsome or not handsome. It's about non-threatening and pleasant looking. So it's not like you're winning a beauty contest. I'm not saying you're the sexiest or I'm the sexiest man alive. What I'm saying is that I always felt like because I'm sort of I'm on the shorter side. Oh yeah, I'm fucking short. Okay, I'll say it, fine. All right, and because I just have a certain look about me that when I approach someone's door, I'm probably gonna have a much easier time of it or not. My question is, what do you think about that? That was a thought I had when I was very young.
So this is a very common question. Obviously, I'm like decently looking white dude. You know what I mean? And I consult and train from all races to all sizes. Like I have buddies that have been top performers, ex-NFL, 300-pound Polynesian dudes. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
And I asked
that. What I'm saying. Is it true or not? I'm saying what I felt when I was young. I'm not saying I still feel that way.
I had the belief system that, yes, you have a huge advantage if you have a non-threatening, you know, appearance to you, right? And a pleasantly looking, you know what I mean? I don't think you have to be good looking, right? I was always under that impression, but I also had the disadvantage I felt when I first got in. I was 18 and I'm competing against 23, 25, 30-year-old sales guys. And I'm this 18-year-old baby face that still can't grow a beard. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking, why would somebody buy from me when I technically look like I don't even know what I'm talking about, and I'm trying to pitch this product to homeowner. And so I thought it was a disadvantage until I learned how to use it towards my advantage. Now all of a sudden I meet an old dude that's 70 years old and saw how he used his older sales experience looking thing to his advantage. Then I saw a black dude go out and sling and use that to his advantage. And I watched, it was interesting, I've watched the talented top 1%. I've seen it in all spectrums of race, size, gender, age since doing this. But it's like the top 1% that can figure it out. I think the majority, if they feel like they have a disadvantage because maybe they aren't as good looking or they are a different race or they're selling in a different age group or whatever that is, I think what they do is they limit themselves more than the customer actually is. Like, they're portraying on the negativity, they're coming up with the insecurity, and they're passing that energy off to customer more so than the customer's actually watching. I think it's more so in an internal belief system than an external, but I do feel there is a little element of do everything in your favor that you can. Like, if I was all tatted up, I'd have sleeves. If I, you know, didn't look good with a beard, I would shave my beard. If I had, you know, I had like a mullet, like I had long hair, but I would like put it up in a bun, hide it and put it in my hat. And like, I, you know, do everything that you can to put yourself in a winning position. But like, I had reps that literally smelled so bad. Like, I'm talking BO that was like, you're across the room and you're like, what just happened? Who died?
The
like,
flowers are wilting.
Yeah. You're like, who died? And they'd walk into my office meeting, you know, and you're like, is somebody going to say something? Like, this is bad. And I'm like, you know, set yourself up to win. So I had to go up to the rep and be like, homeboy, like, take a shower, like wash your clothes. Like, you're in a customer's home. You don't think that they're sitting there going, how soon can this get over because they smell bad? Like, I say, do everything you can in your power to put yourself in a winning position. And then there's a lot of mental work that I think you could overcome. And then I think there's a little edge. Like, I think it's maybe 1-3%.
Right.
But I think it's more on your mind.
What about what I call the law of congruency? Meaning that when we talk about dressing for success, how you should look, how you groom yourself, what clothes do you wear, right? People say, well, what's the rule? Like, you know, how do you know? Well, say, okay, well, if you're a banker, you dress like a banker. If you're a plumber, you dress like a plumber, but the best version of that. So in other words,
yes.
If you're trying to sell plumbing supplies, you're not going to show up in a three-piece suit
yeah.
because they'll think that, oh, this guy's got the most expensive plumbing supplies in the world. Versus, you know, if you're out there as a lawyer or an attorney and someone walks into your office and you're dressed in jeans and sneakers, they'll say, what the hell is this guy? Go Mickey Mouse Law School. So the idea is that, and I'm leading up to an important point here, is that there's always a best way to dress based on what you're selling, what industry you're in. Conversely, the other side is true. Based on how you look, based on how you carry yourself, do you think someone should search out to sell something that's more congruent with them? Mm. So the tatted guy who looks a certain way might be really great at selling auto parts to door to door, or I'm just making this up, a
yeah,
comment,
whatever.
Or working at a Harley Davidson shop, versus the person who looks like you trying to go into a really ethnic neighborhood and be selling sort of, you know, something about hip hop music door to door. I'm just totally, in other
yeah.
words, is, you know, anything is possible, but do you think someone should choose something that sets them up for the best possible outcome?
That's actually a really good question. I think, you know, I don't think anybody should misalign their belief system. And I think we tend to dress and act and speak kind of what we believe in, right? So it's kind of like, if I'm into X, I should be into X. And I'll probably dress that part. I'll speak that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I want to align my product with my belief system. And I tend to outwardly express what my inward belief is, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but on an appearance side of things, I think, you know, here's a perfect example. I had a rep. Like Utah, little white, perfect little guy, go sell solar in South Carolina, where 80% of the neighborhoods were all ethnic, and you know what I mean? And so he, you know, they have a draw, and I go out to shadow him. I'm training out there in South Carolina, and he knocks the door, and he's like, how y'all doing? You know, are you doing okay? Need some sweet tea? And I was like, why'd you put on an accent? Like, he full on had to change his character, and he was like faking who he was.
Right.
And I kind of had to slap him upside the head after his pitch. And I was right. like, what are you doing? Like, you don't think that customer's going to like eventually be like, you're not even from here. They're going to start quizzing you. They're going to start leaning in, and you're going to be the energy that you're portraying off with customer is going to be so inauthentic.
Right.
That's why you're not selling, dude. And I was like, why don't you get rid of the accent, show up as a normal person and be yourself. But to answer your question, I think that there is an element of, sell what works for you. Like, but I also don't think that you should pigeonhole yourself. Like, if you're like, man, I'm tatted up and I'm overweight and I'm XYZ, I can't do this. I don't think you should pigeonhole yourself in a belief system of like limiting. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think like that doesn't mean like, you know, you think of a lawyer and it's like that fit, suited, nice. It's like, well, that doesn't mean that there's not some fat, not so cleaned up lawyer that's crushing it. It's like, you know, being authentic and showing that you can bring value. I think that you don't have to limit yourself based on your look or belief. I think you just need to make sure you align the internal with the external.
What do you think about face masks? Do you knock on someone's door with a face mask on?
It's a really good, I would say anything in your favor. I've seen door-to-door guys with hazmat suits on, dude. Like, I'm talking like full on, like I have a Facebook group called the DDD Tribe. And there was this post the other day, and it was like a full on like plastic bubble that they were in knocking doors.
No.
No joke. And I was like, this is the best thing I think I've seen ever. I had another one where the guy had a tape measure and he would extend it out 6 feet and he just carried that around and he just basically was like this. And I was like, that's awesome. I think what's interesting is the face mask is almost like an appearance thing, like you said. So one, you have an icebreaker, but two, you also have, you know, what is the non-threatening look, right? Your look is short, non-threatening, like you don't look intimidating, so I'm gonna be more inclined to speak to you. So the face mask is just another tool in your tool belt for a non-intimidation factor. Like, don't worry, I'm thinking about COVID, I'm not worried about you. So that's why I'd like, I'd have like keychains with hand sanies, and I have, you know, a tape measure, like whatever that is. I'd get innovated.
The flip side, though, is the most powerful thing of all is a smile.
I know.
So how do you, you know, really offset covering your face when your expression, the vast majority, comes from here down, and by covering it up, you know, you really lose a lot, and also your words don't come out. There's such a huge amount of influence that happens just by watching someone's face as they speak. I personally am concerned about wearing a mask and of trying to get rapport under a mask. I don't know about
that. It'd be tough. So one approach you could take is simply do everything in the first 5 seconds to show like I'm sensitive to you, because you might be knocking on somebody's door or talking to a customer that is very liberal, is very like, you're about to kill me, or I have a precondition and I'm worried about my survival. You don't know who's behind a door. Like you have to kind of approach it with ultimate sensitivity. But then what you do is within the first 10 seconds, you can read their body language. It might be that New Zealand dude that's going to come and give you a hug. Like he's not thinking about face masks. He's thinking about giving you a hug. So what you could do is initially have it be like, hey, don't worry, I'm going to stay 6 feet. Are you one of those ones that's like super nervous? If not, like, I don't want to wear this thing. Like, drop it, make it the joke.
Yeah.
And then be like, okay, let's real talk. Like, use it as like an ace at the beginning to understand like, who am I, what type of customer am I dealing with?
So my daughter had COVID-19.
Oh, wow.
She had it really early. She had it in end of February, believe it or not, really early on, at the beginning of March. Little, very minor case, but she had it. She was sick, and she tested positive.
Blah. Can she give it to me? I'm like, just give it to
me.
Like,
well, here's my question. So my daughter now is immune. She has antibodies. Let's say you're a door-to-door salesman, and you've had it, and you're immune. Do you have it? Because now you're immune. You're not like, you can't carry it. You can't transmit it. Do you have a thing saying, I am a COVID-19? What about something that
like
says,
I'm immune.
I'm immune. I'm not a carrier. I have antibodies positive. I'm wondering here, because I'm disturbed about this as much as anything, that what might end up happening here, because right now we're about to enter this screening of about antibodies. No longer it's just do you have it, is have you had it and are you now immune? Or at least they think you'll be immune. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that you will be. Even if you test positive, the way the tests work, they pick up fragments of the virus. You're not contagious. You don't express symptoms, but you are immune, so you can catch it and you can't give it to someone else. So you're a door-to-door salesman now, and it's very well known throughout the world, at least the United States, that there's going to be these immune people who've had it who cannot transmit it. If you're in that group, do you put that on a label or patch or something? Well, the first words that listen, I want you know that I'm immune, I have it, here's my immunity card. But does that create, that creates a whole nother question, two classes of citizens, immune and non-immune.
So here's an interesting thought. And let's just generalize sales technique, right? So I have different sales techniques on an opener, right? So whether I'm, you know, going B2B, DDD, whatever, it's one of the things is the authoritative approach. And so I show them, here's my license with the city. Here's my certifications. Here's my identification. Here's my, like, I use it as like a, I'm in charge. Like, think of a police officer knocking in a uniform on your door. You're not going to ask questions. You're going to be like, what do you want? Right? So if I can come off with this authoritative ace at the beginning, automatically customers going, okay, I'm listening. What is it? Right? So the approach may be, you have a printed certification from like with like a letterhead from the hospital or something showing that looks really authoritative.
Hanging around your neck on a lanyard,
or even laminated or something like
that. I'm
saying, and you hand it to them.
Well, hang on your neck.
Hanging on your badge, yeah, like the badge, and it's like you shrink size it. You're like, I shrunk it down or whatever, so it hangs on your lanyard. Something like that that you hand them, and you say, "This is my immunity. Just to make sure that I'm legit. Here's my city permit. Here's my this." And you like it's almost like a credential. And you're like, that's why I'm here. Like, there's so many people out there that can't do what I do. Luckily, I'm one of the only ones that you're able to talk to because of this card. So check this out. And that's like your ace to build the authority and be like, I'm one of the only certified people that can actually be authorized, that should be allowed to even be out here. Mm-hmm. So don't talk to all the other ones that don't have this. So that's what makes you unique. You know, my dad was always in business. He says, you need to come up with what makes you different. Like, in business, you always have to come up with like your unique identifier, right? Mm-hmm. So you, amongst all the other door-to-door salespeople having that, you can now put yourself in a different class. See what I mean? It's like, oh yeah, if they don't have this card, you should probably not even talk to them. Does that make sense? It's kind of like, oh, you've probably had a lot of people coming by, but none of them have had this. This shows that I'm legit. Like, use it. And I'm just speaking, the psychology of that could be used and applied in any sales situation. And I think that's a great idea.
What do you consider to be the best door-to-door product in the pre-COVID world? In the past, going back a year or two ago, what was the best thing to sell door-to-door that you've seen? You know all the different industries. What was the best one?
I might get in trouble for this. Careful. I have to stay neutral, right? So I'm going to play diplomatic.
I'm not saying company. I'm saying industry product.
So it all kind of depends. So here's a good example.
Give me the top three
products. I'll give you the top three, and I'm going to actually tie it back to your question of congruent. Because what happened was, when you say, hey, align yourself with a product that's congruent, right? There's certain people in a level of sales ability that can't sell solar, just because you have to understand tax liabilities and you have to be able to analyze somebody's, you know, tax returns and rebates and financing and all these other things that just take a little next level, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that there's levels of experience. So my number one would be solar. And the reason being is it's a win-win-win situation, meaning I help save you money, I make money, and we all help the planet. Like, you know what I mean? There's no downside to getting solar. And the commissions, especially like in your neighborhood, like if I sold somebody down here, you could make several thousands of dollars per deal.
Right. And do you think that the best way to sell solar is a straight door-to-door sale, or is there a lead generator, a warm lead, and you're knocking that lead, or just going door-to-door cold?
So there's 50 ways to skin the cat, right?
Which is the best one?
Mine is, you knock your own deals, you close your own deals. I think so many people are like, I'm a closer, right? We consult a ton of solar companies. I mean, that's probably our number one industry of client. And I watch so many of these sales guys say, I'm the baddest solar closer, and I'm this, 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 and this, but they're not willing to do the actual mining themselves. And so they're so dependent on the lead quality, the lead volume, the, you know, and I'm sitting there going, you know how easy it is to just go create your own lead, and you now nurture it. You know what's qualified, what's not qualified, and you're not wasting and spending time driving around LA County trying to, you know what I mean? Like, just go knock a door, go sell it. And the guys making millions of dollars in solar as salespeople, there are those guys, are knocking and closing their own deals. Like, I don't know dudes that are making millions that aren't willing to go beat the streets and self-gen their own appointment. Like, very, very few. And there's probably some out there, but it's more the guys that are willing to go there. The model is they create the lead, they sell the deal.
And are those people doing it as a one call close?
I was a one call close guy, and some people hated me for it. They're like, dude, you can't sell solar in one visit. And I'm like, I can. Like, I do it all the time. So I think there's different sales models. My style was knock it. Hey, I'll be back in 10 minutes with your numbers. Go in, close it. Like, boom. And some people do 3 touches, 4 touches, and they do that on intention because their belief system is they better build some more rapport and have a slower sales process, because the install process is about, you know, a month or 2 months, right? So they don't want the customer to cancel. So they feel like if they have more touch points and slower sales process, they're gonna have less cancels. And I'm like, I'm just gonna sell a ton, and I don't care if I have cancels or not. So like, I took a different approach. But the second industry, so like, take pest control, for example. This would probably be another big one. It's a lower ticket, higher volume sale, right? You're selling $400 to $600 contract values on a yearly contract, right? You're not selling a $30,000 solar system, you're selling a pest control service, I'll come out every quarter kind of thing. But what's interesting is it's a reoccurring customer, right? Your customer might stick for 5 years, 3 years, right? So from a business standpoint, it's actually a very lucrative business, but it's a much easier sell. It's 10, 15 minutes to get a customer, say, start to finish, right? So that's a pretty common industry. So if I'm in college and I'm only going to do this part-time and I've never sold anything, you could go make a lot of quick money doing alarms or pest control, and you're not having to like go master sales 3-4 touch close processes and follow-ups and leads, and you know what I mean, like there's a little bit more complication of project management and roofing or solar or the higher ticket type things. So if you're new and you're inexperienced, you want to get your toe wet, I would say you know, a lower ticket item like pest control or alarms would probably be a better industry for you, you know? So I always kind of try to pick who is, like, when you say congruent, it's kind of like, what's your sales ability, right? Mm-hmm. And then my goal would be, how do I go and make more and more and more? Like, now I sell $70,000 to $100,000 consulting packages, right? So it's like my sales just keep going up and up from a ticket item. You know, I think if I was a realtor, I'd say, what? How do I go sell a freaking apartment complex? How do I go sell a commercial building? Like, I wouldn't want to stay in the townhome business because I make 3%. If I make 3% of a commercial building, that's a hell of a lot more than 3% of a townhome. You know, like, I trained Keller Williams the other day, and I did a whole training on closing because I was like, okay, what listings are you going after? And how, like, you know what I mean? Real estate is such a big spectrum. Mm-hmm. Can you do it door to door? Heck yeah, you can. Like, you know, that's what I was training on. So, like, I think.
Door to door for what?
For real estate.
What aspect of it?
Oh, so like trying to get people to list their home. Okay, so a lot of people, it's like, hey, your home value's gone up. Let's get you X amount and let's get you in a better home. You know what I mean? Like, let's upgrade you. Like,
right. Well, that's a very common way to get listings versus 100%. To go door to door. Right.
100%. So
what's the strategy that you teach people?
So on real estate specifically. So real estate, I would say, you know, I have what's called the DDD formula, right? So it's reps times opportunities times closing percentage equals money. It's not a very complicated formula. And I think what happens with most realtors, right? You, like, in Utah, real estate is like such a common thing because you have a bunch of stay-at-home moms that are like, I want to side hustle, and they get their real estate license and they sell two homes a year. And it's like, congratulations. You talk to your four friends that happen to know that you're a realtor, and they felt so much loyalty to you so that they happen to use your license. Like, that's about the average realtor. So I just say, well, if you're not doing any kind of marketing, like, what better way to go talk to 100 people a day? Like, it's a contact sport. And that's what's interesting is whether you're B2B or you're D2D, like in residential or whatever, it's a contact sport. And the more people you talk to and the more people I can leverage to talk to more people. So meaning my approach would be I'd get a bunch of kids, like I'd recruit college kids, high school kids, you know, and I'd give them a percentage or a cut or a lead percentage.
Yeah.
And I would say, we're all going to freaking blitz this area and either, you know, knock, leave a flyer, like leave some kind of leave behind and try to drum up some interest, get noisy in this mark, in this neighborhood. Right. Okay. So I'm specifically targeting my neighborhood. Then I'm going to buy the data for the neighborhood. Right. So there's apps like Cole Information and a lot of companies you can buy neighborhood data, which means their name, phone number, emails, you can get all that data. So then I can retarget via social media. I can do a ringless voicemail drop. I can do a, you know, a text campaign. So I own a texting software called Vanilla that I teach people to use. So like I call it the seven different doors you could be knocking. The front door is just one door, but you go against me belly to belly. I don't know any other avenue of marketing that's going to beat me when I'm standing at your door and I've already built some trust through other avenues and now I'm here. It's kind of like, it's go time. You're not looking at anything else other than me right now, right?
Okay, so what you're saying is that you're talking about the marketing
side. You would take some marketing.
That's marketing.
Yeah, so you would take we call it warming the neighborhood, right?
Okay.
So you'd beat the streets, you warm the neighborhood through other avenues of door knock. Then I would show up and I'd say, you probably seen us around. You probably got the mailer. You probably got the text. You probably got the email, like whatever that is.
Right.
So you've got at least like a foot in the door, like an angle, right? Or you talk to my appointment guy, meaning my little high school kid or a college kid or whatever. And then I'd hit him with my approach. So that would be like the really strategic way to door knocking, right? A lot of people think it's just like, oh, drop me off in any neighborhood. I'm just going to go knock. It's like, no. I'd have some meaningful strategy to how I would approach my neighborhood.
Is that what you would do with solar as well?
100%. So I would. You think about it. We've all heard the thing, seven no's to get a yes, right? And it's like, okay, if I can get three or four of the no's out of the way before I even show up, what's the likelihood of me getting a yes now? You know, re-knocking is another common thing, right? A lot of people are like, I already knocked that neighborhood. I've already been here. I'm like, yeah, that should be your favorite neighborhood to go to. I'm back. Right? Like a lot of people have the mindset of, I already talked to those people. We've already knocked that area. We've already been there. And I think re-knocking isn't a very underutilized practice because it's,
I mean, I've door to door everything.
You've been there. Yeah.
But I think the interesting thing, there's two things about re-knocking. One is that there's always, oh, it's smashed, it's saturated, everyone's knocked out. That's the big thing, right? So whenever that happened, I would like, I remember this, two great examples. One was when, had a company that was on a main drag called Jericho Turnpike in Long Island, New York, right? And it was right in, like, office to office, right? And I had these guys going out door to door doing mortgages during the refi boom. And they were smashing it. I had days I made 100 grand in one day doing refis. It was that great, right? And this is 2002, and my life was going to shit, so I was making money going door to door, right? And these kids came back, oh, it's sold, you can't sell anywhere. Everyone's heard the pitch. I was like, get the fuck out of here. And I took the kid and said, let's go. And I went literally to the next door. There was a florist. I walked in, did the pitch. No one needed it. Next door, nothing. Third door, dry clean, a guy named Bob Negrin. All right, I walk in there, and he's like, basically curses me out. And then, of course, 5 minutes later, he's like, all right, come to my house. Right, because I had to do that. And ended up, the guy did his mortgage, made $13,000, and he came to work for me.
Wow.
Yeah. The point was, is that they had, A, right outside the office was people that either had never heard the pitch because people think I have to drive so far away, or is on any given day, you never know who's going to be there. You never know what mood they're going to be in, right? Second situation, when I invented this idea of going mortgage door to door, no one had ever tried it before. I was the first person to ever go door to door to refi. So what I was doing was for home refis.
Love that.
But business owners at their place of business. Every small business has an owner who owns a home.
Yes.
So I'd say, hey, what are you paying on your home mortgage? Very simple, right? First day I came up with the idea, it was myself and my partner's wife. I said, all right, I'm going to go down this side of the street. You're going to go down that side of the street. I told her what to say, gave her the pitch, right? I go to the first store. It's a restaurant. Nothing works. Second, a seafood place. I still remember all the names of all the people. Phil DeRosa, DeRosa
but
Seafood.
But that's saying something, guys. What? This is 2002. This is however many years ago, and you still remember the names.
And like, every person I sold to, right?
Love it.
Phil DeRosa, DeRosa Seafood. Second door I knock on with this new idea I have. Bam. $7,500 commission. I do his mortgage, right? I go down three more doors. Another arts and crafts store. Bam. Refi that lady. Another $5,000. I made $12,000 in 1 hour. Hour and a half, maybe, right? I'm like, I said, oh my God, I'm going to be a billionaire. This is the greatest thing in the world, right? I'm saying, her name is Shelly. Shelly must be kicking ass on the other side of the street. I looked, there's a jewelry store, and this store's like, oh my God.
You're just salivating.
I'm like, salivating. And I crossed the street, finish up. I got those two sales. I crossed the street, and I'm like, looking for Shelly, and I see on a park bench, and she's like this hysterical crying on the park bench. I'm like, Shelly, what are you doing? She goes, no, nobody wanted it. No one will buy. It's impossible. I'm like, Shelly, I just made $12,000. She's like, what? No way. I'm like, Shelly, watch. I went down the same street that she just had walked down and made two more sales. The same street. There was a jeweler. It was the second one. And then there's Benedetto Auto Buy. It was same street. All right? What it is when, you know, this idea of, you know, re-knocking, you made me think, is that so much of it is that first few seconds, the way you're perceived is so make or break. Like when they look you in the eye, when you say those first three or four words, either you got them or you don't. I'm not saying they're going to buy from you because they are, you know, their imagination gets captured in some way. But if they don't perceive you the right way, I'm a big believer that in every sales situation, you are judged. You're ripped apart. They put you back together based on how you're perceiving. Either they perceive you the right way, which in my mind is being sharp, enthusiastic, and expert in your field. They'll listen. They open up to listen versus them just saying, nah, I'm not interested, get out, right? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm consulting this company out in Maryland. And you know, I go by myself a lot of times, and they had 30 sales reps. And I was like, after I train, I'm a walk the walk kind of guy. I'm not like, oh, I'm a consultant that doesn't know what the hell he's doing. So I'm like, guys, let's go. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, let's go hit the field. And they're like, there's 30 of us. Like, how are we going to do that? I'm like, I don't know. We'll figure it out. So we go out there. They all want to shadow me. And I send like half of them this way. And I had about 10 or 15 of them knocking with me. And the other 10, 15 go down this street. And they call me like maybe 20 minutes later, the other group. They're like, hey, where are you at? When are we going to switch? And I'm like, dude, we just started. Like, give me a minute. They're like, well, we already knocked this street. Where should we go? I'm like, well, I'm coming down this street. I'll meet you up there. And I was like, I just got out of one. And they're like, wait, we just knocked that street. I'm like, I know. And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, yeah, the first home I talked to said that they talked to you 5 minutes ago. I just got done selling him a roof. And we got it all on film. It's on my YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
And it was funny because they were like, wait, you sold that guy? He said this. And I was like, well, yeah. And he said he talked to you 5 minutes ago. And then I pitched him and then he bought. Right. And they're like, what the freak? And they start running. I see him at the other end of the street starting to like kind of pick up their pace. They're like, wait, we can't miss this. Like they're all excited. Like, you're going to knock the same street we just knocked. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, I don't care. Like, whatever. I don't want to walk all the way to the other street because that's right. A long ways. So I was like, let's just knock this one again. So
I want to make this really constructive. Do you believe that's because, you know, you're you and I'm me, we have this special power, or is it a learnable skill?
100%. I think first off, it's a mindset. I think people lose the door before they even knock the door. Meaning they are like, take California. It's so saturated for solar, or everybody's knocked here before, or whatever. And I'm like, you've already lost.
Oh, right. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when you said solar, you know, the first thing I thought of, I said, I'm looking at all those helms. I'm like, I bet you every single one has never heard the pitch before. There's every door's been knocked on. Bullshit. You cannot saturate this. It's impossible.
Well, and if they had been knocked 10 times, well, you have to be the 11th to end up getting it for them. You know what I mean? Like my mindset is none of them were as good of a sales guy as me. So that's like the learnable mindset, in my opinion, is who cares what's happened in the past? Nobody is going to knock that door with the same mentality that I am. And I'm here more convicted to say, I'm going to get this deal. So that's the mindset.
How about this? How about the belief system? I want everyone to try this on for size. No matter what you're selling, calling on the phone, knocking on a door, is there a complete reset in the mind of every consumer out there right now?
Yes.
Because of what's just gone on? As you said, you know, people now all of a sudden are talking to you. I believe that if you knock on someone's door right now or call them on the phone, everything that happened before COVID-19 has almost been erased. Their belief systems, their openness to speak, their closeness to speak. You know, I don't think the past equals the future in any way. So if you knocked on someone's door 8 times before this happened to sell them solar, they went, no. Now it's a totally different
world.
What is it now? It's a new world.
It's COVID world.
Right. So, you know, maybe things make sense that I think everything changes.
I would agree. You know, and now that you say that, You got to think like, and it might not be in your favor.
No, maybe
it might not.
Exactly. It might be against
you. It might be against you.
It's a reset. I think it's a reset.
I think that people are all going to, whether for the good or for the bad, reevaluate everything that they're doing in life. Family, fitness, you know, like, oh, I can work out at the home versus the gym. Or, you know what I mean? Like, they're just making new habits. They're making new decision-making processes. And, you know, that could be for or against a salesman. You know, I think online, it was funny. I was running with my brother-in-law. He does online furniture. And he's like, dude, I've had my biggest month ever. Because he's like, what more people are realizing is instead of going to the furniture store, they can buy online. Right. And I think a lot of the furniture, you know, I'd never buy a couch online. We're forced to go look online because they can't go into a warehouse, right? And so I think that for or against certain people, it's definitely going to shift how people buy and consume. And you know what's interesting though too is I think people are going to be more empathetic towards one another, meaning I think there's a compassion like bug inside of everybody going, man, it must have been hard getting laid off, or it must have been hard having to shift your business. Like, you know, my uncle calls me yesterday and he's raising money for nonprofits. I'm like, dang, like, probably too hard to do fundraising right now when nobody has money. You know what I mean? I'm sitting there like, I'm more empathetic where he would have called me 6 months ago. I'd have been like, well, you know, I either want to donate or not donate. You know what I mean? That was my decision making versus like, oh man, I feel bad. Like, I'll talk to you. Let's like empathize real quick. So I think that from a salesman's perspective, I think people are going to be more empathetic. I think people are going to be thinking through decisions differently. I think also if we go into a recession, which I think we will, it's
obviously,
yeah. So I think that from a salesman perspective, I think that the sharpening of the craft is going to be much more vital, because when you're in a pocket pinching economy, you also aren't just by happenstance getting lucky because you happen to be there. I think you have to actually go practice your craft. I think so many people are weak sauce salespeople because they don't study it. They don't master it. They don't study the psychology and the mindsets and all the things that go into it as much as they need to. And they've been surviving in an easy game of a high economy. You go survive in a low game of a low economy. That's when you know you're a good salesperson. So I think that there's a definite shift or reset from a consumer, from a salesman. Better be a reset. You know, just okay is not going to cut it anymore, in my opinion. Those are just kind of the shifts I'm seeing.
I'm closing here. So what advice would you give to someone who's out there right now, who's lost their job? They have no experience in selling. Say they're just not salespeople. They've never done it before, right?
Yeah.
Would you say give door-to-door a shot? Or if you haven't done it and you're 30 years old and you have, it's like, can't teach an old dog new tricks. So can anyone get in there and make money going door-to-door if they're willing to learn the system?
100%. And my mission is to bring some honor, integrity, unify, up-level the space. I mean, that's what I like quit my day job for. And it's to advocate door-to-door. I started a nonprofit, the Door-to-Door Association. We're working with schools and government societies and things like that to help push this as a viable job. Like, I think that a lot of people put this stigma or this, like, I would never be caught dead. My mom would disown me if I was a door-to-door. Like, you know, you go to your high school reunion and people are going to be like, what do you do? I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. I'm a mechanic. I'm a door-to-door salesman. It's like, oh, where did things go wrong? You know what I mean? Like, that's the stigma. And I'm like, my mission is to shift that, right? And I think it's dumb for people to overlook this profession because of the amount of opportunity, the lifestyle, the freedom to travel, the freedom to eat what you kill, the freedom to get outside and meet people and really learn the art of true face-to-face selling. Like, I think it's a diminishing skill. I think that the hustle muscle is diminishing in society. They're waiting for the lead. They're waiting for the click. They're waiting. Like, I'm literally saying it's the time to find that as an opportunity and get over the ego, get over the whole perception and just say, well, what if I was actually good at this? What if I could learn this? Like, there are guys making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, millions of dollars a year as a sales professional going out and beating the streets. And I go, oh, and you're sitting here in a recession, you just lost your job and you're not willing. Like I'd be like, this is an upgrade. Like, this is the first time somebody whacked you upside the head and said, get out of society's drift, making 50 grand a year and go double that, triple that. Like, what an upgrade. And I think most people, because of the stigma of door to door, they see it as a downgrade. So that would be my invitation.
Good deal. All right, guys, listen, share this with your friends. It's important. This is a skill, persuasion, selling, whether it's door-to-door or by phone, that you have to have in your toolbox if you really want to make the most money for the amount of time you put into something. So share this one, comment on it, and I will see you next week at the Wolf's Den. Take care. God bless.